From Relay FM, this is Connected, episode number 59. Today's show is brought to you by Squarespace, Build It Beautiful, Hover, Simplified Domain Management, and Fracture, photos printed in vivid color directly on glass. My name is Mike Hurley, and I have the pleasure, as always, by being joined by Mr. Federico Fittici.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Federico.
Hi.
Hi, and Mr. Stephen Hackett as well. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello, Mike, and also hello, Federico.
Hello, Stephen, and also Mike again.
And hello to the listeners out there. This has been Connected. Anyway, Stephen, let's do some follow-up.
So it's two-part follow-up today. The first one is about 3D Touch. So we're going to talk about 3D Touch later in the show.
Are we following up before we've even got to the topic?
Yeah, it's, well, because we have to take care of the past issues with the topic before we can move to the present issues of the topic.
Okay.
What?
Have you not learned anything on how this works?
This has gotten so confusing. All these prepositions after the follow part of the show. Follow up, follow in, follow out.
This is like follow before or something.
Yeah, it's like a combo in Street Fighter. I'm not sure I'm following anymore. Whatever.
It's like follow, so, it's follow around.
Okay.
Okay.
Follow round robin.
Oh God.
We had talked concerning 3D Touch if some people would find it uncomfortable to use because you got to put force down. Mike, I think you and I had both voiced some concern about that. We heard from a couple people this week saying that that was indeed the case for them, that they found the act of like pushing kind of through the glass, that sort of sensation being uncomfortable. I think it's nice that Apple included in accessibility the option to adjust the sensitivity of 3D Touch. So there's basically low, like the medium, which is the default, and then high. And they even include a little image on that screen where you can practice the 3D Touch just to kind of see how it feels. I've ended up turning mine down so it's easier, not because it was uncomfortable for my thumb, but because I have this 6S Plus and because I use it one-handed a good bit of the time, I knew that I was just going to 3D Touch it out of my hand. And so I turned it down to be a little bit easier. So I'm like pushing down an icon. It just like flips out of my hand into the abyss. But, so there's that. Have you guys had any issues with it?
Are you trolling me?
Oh, Federico. I did turn it all the way down. I've said this before. I will maintain my position. I find 3D Touch a little bit uncomfortable, just cause you're smushing, you know, you're like smushing your finger into the screen. I did have pain in my thumb, but I think it's because I was like a couple of days ago, but like, I think I was using it too much, right? I was like constantly trying to activate the multitasking thing. And I think the problem is because it's so far away, right, on the 6 Plus, that if you play around with it too much, it's going to hurt. But like, I actually don't like, that's the title. I actually don't like the multitasking gesture. I think it's a bit awkward to activate, so I'll probably keep to the home button. But yeah, I did turn it all the way down, and I like the force touch the actual setting, the lowest sensitivity, whatever they call it.
Yeah,
I think it's nicer that way.
You guys have clearly never played Super Smash Brothers or Street Fighter or Tekken to a very obsessive extent, because the more you play these games, you develop some kind of thumb resistance and you never feel pain or, you know, slight touches on your thumb ever again. So I feel like this won't be an issue for me because I have the thumb skin of a gamer. And
my issue isn't so much the problem with the skin on my thumb. It's the pain in the joints. It doesn't hurt my thumb, like the tip of my thumb. It's hurting like the joint of my thumb. And I'm probably like in the minority, and I was saying it's an upgrade. I'm very sensitive to the thought of RSI at the moment. So I think I'm like overreacting. But it's just because it's really, really in the front of my mind because I've been getting wrist pains again. So I think I'm very sensitive to the idea of something making that worse. It's just been something I've been thinking about. But we'll talk about 3D Touch and our opinions of it a little bit later on in the show today.
Hey, why don't you press with your nose, Mike?
Do you know what? I haven't tried that. Let's do that right now.
You're so proud of your nose as a as an input mechanism.
Yeah, it works, man.
Are you seriously trying to press your nose against the glass?
I am doing it right now. Like, and I'm selecting something with workflow, so I'm like dragging my nose across the screen. But the problem is when you're that close to the phone, you can't see it. That's the only
this
problem.
Has gone too far, man.
I activated a workflow. What one? I activated the convert time zones workflow.
With your nose.
With my nose.
And 3D touch.
Good work.
Yep. I feel like I have gone too far.
It's a miracle of technology, Mike. Thank you. Thank you for trying, Michael.
Carlos sent in some follow-up about the Apple TV in regards to Apple Music.
How's he doing?
He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Yeah?
He's you know, hammering away on the Apple TV or something. And so this is what Carlos said. This is in response to the discussion we had about Apple Music and the seeming lack of support in the Apple TV. So this is what they said. With music, you can choose things on the screen with Siri, which is probably accessibility driven. So, for example, if you're on the Apple Music new page and it shows Ellie Goulding, you can say play Ellie Goulding and it will play, or you could say show me activity playlists and it would go to that screen. But if, for example, you said play the Arctic Monkeys and none of their music was on that page, you get an error. So currently there's no way to access Apple Music content beyond what is featured on new and for you, providing you're on those screens. Interestingly, Siri does correctly interpret the band name and artists displaying them in the Siri UI, it just can't do anything with them. And some Siri commands that are supported in the music app are play, pause, fast forward, and start over. Not supported are skip track, next track, and next. How weird, right? Like, especially the music commands, because you can see the music commands that work are the commands that you would say when you're watching a TV show, right? Like play, pause, fast forward, and start over. But skip track, and next. Obviously, you don't say those things when you're watching something on the TV, so they're not going to work. So, again, pre-release, but if this is the way it actually is, that's super strange to me.
Maybe Carlos should try in Spanish.
That's a good point.
Except his name was Bob until you changed it. So I don't know if he's had time to learn Spanish in a week.
Oh no, what I didn't say before, his full name was Spanish Bob. And now we've changed it to Carlos. So
you know, I can improvise some Spanish, like Próxima Canción. I guess it's next track. You know?
Yeah.
I'm just making up Spanish words from Italian ones.
I don't think our Spanish friends would be very happy that
that's
how you consider their
language. It's really similar. And I have I made some new Spanish friends here in Rome. They're studying at the same dance school where Silvia goes. And I studied Spanish back in middle school, and I haven't spoken, you know, any Spanish in like 10 years. But I understand Spanish quite a bit, and now I'm, you know, with these new friends, I'm exposed to more Spanish every day. But still, Próxima Canción is probably not the right way to say it.
Hang on.
I'm sure we will get tons of follow-up.
Can you back up a second? You were in middle school 10 years ago?
No, actually, it's a little more.
The thing to remember is, like, what people call schools, the different types of schools, is different all over the world.
Yeah, but you're not 18 in middle school anywhere.
No, but I mean, more like 15 years ago, Stephen. Well, thank you for making me feel old. I bet you were feeling alone today, so you really needed this.
Thank you for making me feel younger.
And thank you all for making me feel the exact same age as I was before, even though I hardly ever know what that is. El Capitan reviews are out. It comes out September 30th, which is tomorrow as we record this. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, it's not it's fine, right? I've been running it on my laptop. The best parts that I find about El Capitan is like the notes app, and I love the new mission control. Mm-hmm. The split screen stuff, I like all of that.
So I think El Capitan is an interesting release, but it's not a very noteworthy one. Like, there was nothing in it, in my opinion, and my review's coming up a little bit later today. In my opinion, there's nothing in it that couldn't be a point update to Yosemite, honestly. I think it's fine. Like, they're going to do this annual release thing, and that's fine. I don't like it, but they don't listen to me. But the...
Hey, Rich shouldn't either.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they do an annual release. I just wish they didn't. I think, though, when they do these annual releases, that there's only so much that they can get done within a year. I mean, even look at photos, you know, it came out in 10.10.3, so it was basically mid-cycle Yosemite. And I think that's because they couldn't get it out the door in time to launch with Yosemite, or wasn't ready, or I mean, who knows what. And so they already do things mid-cycle. It's just that the cycle's really fast. And I don't know, the Mac is, you know, the Mac is stable. The Mac is a mature platform. And in my mind, the days for like really crazy OS X updates are probably behind us. I mean, Yosemite is going to set the tone for years to come. And LCAP is just not a very big step past that, which it's fine. Like I'm perfectly okay with that. It's just important going into it. Like our lack of enthusiasm is sort of born from like, it's kind of a boring update.
I think like they do the yearly releases because I guess now because they have yearly releases on iOS, right? So like as iOS needs new features, sometimes some of those features have to be mirrored on the Mac. So they're going to have to put right. stuff out every year anyway. So they might as well just say, well, everything comes out once a year.
It's features and it's shared technologies. And so things like continuity and handoff using an SURL session, that sort of stuff, they is more and more of that shared. You know, when Apple did their sort of reorg and rethink about the way the things they build, it used to be that there'd be people in the OS X division and the iOS division building on the same thing, but not having a lot of communication and not having, you know, basically having the minimal viable teamwork kind of between those organizations. And now it is much more sort of mixed and open and put together. And I think that helps OS X and iOS work better together. But I think that does basically ensure that we're going to see an annual release. It just means that each one, it's not a Snow Leopard release. Like El Capitan is not a Snow Leopard release. There are new features. There are actually quite a few user-facing features. But, you know, the more they share, the more that these things are just going to be tied together naturally. And I think that's fine. I think you just have to understand that the trade-offs that come with that.
There are some interesting developer technologies in El Capitan, I think. There's like a new compression algorithm that supposedly doesn't have many advantages over the old compression stuff that they did, but it's faster. There's, of course, Swift 2. There's a new Xcode. There's a lot of some welcome metal changes for developers. So more specifically, this is for games and graphically intensive apps. And I haven't seen, probably because I don't have a Mac that, you know, supports the latest metal things. But there's a potential for a lot of improved games coming to OS X with metal. And I've seen, of course, the other technical changes, the system integrity protection, which, you know, this I wanted to ask I want to ask people like Steven and Mike, you know, you too use OS X quite a bit, and this SIP stuff is going to change like the way that some apps can modify the system because it doesn't give admin users access to, you know, kernel modifications, that kind of stuff. Do you think this will be a problem in, you know, for years to come? If you want to tinker with OS X, if you want to change stuff, if you want to modify things. And I'm considering like stuff like Candy Bar, which used to be an app to change the system icons, or even Dropbox. It started as a Finder hack to show syncing icons in the Finder and to make a special Dropbox folder. Do you think that this new security stuff in El Capitan is going to be a problem for future generation of kids who want to just mess around and create things by breaking the existing frameworks and features of the OS?
I mean, I think to a degree, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, you look back at older versions of OS X where all that stuff was possible, you know, the era of the Haxi. We were doing some crazy stuff to our system that really did, you know, take advantage and even create security issues on the system. I think OS X will always be more flexible and more open than iOS in that way. But I don't blame Apple that, you know, they've got to solve these issues and that they need to ensure that their system is secure from, you know, things like, you know, code injection and all sorts of other stuff that can happen. And SIP is interesting. You know, it's basically looking after the welfare of the system itself. You can still play out in user land all you want, you know, within sandboxing and stuff. So I think it's just one more step in that direction. I do think that that some types of apps will go away. You know, just like apps that can't exist under sandboxing have been, you know, removed from the store and now only exist on the outside. It does mean that certain types of things will have to change or be updated. Like I know Bartender 2, which comes out today, Bartender 2 is slightly revamped so it can work within the new confines. And I think legitimate developers and legitimate applications will find ways around it. And I think that things that are not legitimate will continue to be more difficult to work on. And that's a fine trade-off with me.
Yeah, I don't understand it enough, in all honesty. Like, but as long as this, because I don't do anything I think that's really, really crazy to the system. Like stuff like Bartender is as far as I go. My kind of expectation would be the things that I use and the things that even that most nerds like me use will probably end up being okay. And as long as that's the case, then good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, it's not keeping me up at night.
It's not my my very, very little understanding is it's not as tough as sandboxing was.
Yep.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to do, I guess. There's an issue of the principle, you know, of locking down some system modifications. It's more of a theoretical problem than maybe a practical one for prosumers of some kind. You know, people like us, people like you, actually, you use OS 10 to a professional extent. Even if you don't, like, you're not a rocket science engineer, you're not doing, you know, crazy stuff, but you're still using OS 10 for work. So you're maybe above the threshold of consumer. And for people like you, you want to install Bartender, you want to make some lightweight modifications. So the technology is, you know, you can say it's not a big deal for me. I understand the concern, but it doesn't affect me in any meaningful way. But for people who really like to mess around, to play around, to look at stuff, to change settings and other things that Apple doesn't want you to change, that's going to be not a theoretical problem, but a practical one. So it'll be interesting. Like right now, I'm going to ask you, I ask Steven, and you say it's not a big deal for me. But I want to see in like a couple of years when this becomes, you know, the common practice, you cannot access these types of system features unless you go through crazy hoops to disable them. I'm curious to see if, you know, we will ever get the same degree of customization on OS X that we used to have. Probably not. Probably there's going to be some new way to play around, hack things, break them. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely one to watch out for. All right, let's take our first break. This week's episode is brought to you by Casper. They are an online retailer of premium mattresses that let you get fantastic mattresses for a fraction of the price that you will find in stores. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and all of the showrooms and everything that's kind of in between, and getting rid of all of that stuff that's made people pay high prices for years, and taking the savings that they can give and pass them directly onto the consumer. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. Their mattresses are one of a kind. They've created their own hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam with memory foam, and these two technologies come together for better nights and brighter days. Casper mattresses have just the right sink and just the right bounce. Casper understands that buying a mattress online can leave people wondering, kind of, how is this possible? Like, you're used to going to the showroom and you sit on the bed, right? That's how you know that the mattress is good. No, that is wrong. What Casper do is way better. Buying a mattress of Casper is completely risk-free. You go on, you select the mattress that you want, they will ship it to you for free, and you can try it out for 100 days. And within that time period, if you're not happy, you can return it to Casper and they will pick it up from you for free as well. It's completely risk-free to try out a Casper mattress. It really is that simple. Just sitting on a bed for a few minutes has no correlation to whether this is the right mattress for you. You need to put it on your bed, right? And have your nice little sheets and stuff, and you sleep and you know if the mattress is right for you. That's how you should be testing them out. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out mattresses in reality, because you're going to be spending like a third of your life on them. Casper mattresses are shipped to you in a box. Opening them is an experience all of its own, as their vacuum-packed mattress in an impossibly small box kind of breathes itself to life and is ready for you to sleep on. It's kind of crazy to see. Usually, mattresses can cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost like fantastic prices. They're between $500 for a twin mattress, $750 for a full sized, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king size. And all Casper mattresses are made in America. Listeners of this show can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/connected and using the code connected at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. See the website for details. Thank you so much to Casper for supporting this show and all of Relay FM.
Do we want to talk about our new phones?
Yeah, I mean, I think what might be fun is because a couple of weeks ago we spoke about and we looked at your post, Stephen, that you did. About the kind of the things that you wanted in the 6 Plus. And I think it might be fun to look at that through that lens. Does that make sense? So, like, to see, were we right? Did we get the things that we wanted?
Yeah, so we had talked about things like RAM. I think it was RAM, speakers, haptic motor, and Touch ID, I think were the big four things.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right.
And so I think we spoke last week. You and I both have the 6S Plus. We stayed in the Mike Was Right Club. I think Federico will do that once the phone is available to him. Is that correct, Federico?
Yep. Yes.
So I think the biggest thing for me at least is that the RAM has been updated to 2 gigs. And with the improved processor speed, the 6S Plus, at least in my experience, is much faster than the old Plus. You know, the old Plus really struggled at times. It had, you know, it's got more pixels to drive than the regular 6, and but basically with the same internals. And at times, the 6 Plus could really feel bogged down. We've spoken a lot about that over the last year. We would just sort of like bottom out sometimes. And I've not had that with the 6S Plus. And I'm sure part of that is a new iOS install, and there's lots of factors, but I really do think that this phone really finally has the horsepower it needs to drive the display. And I mean, the RAM really is what I feel the most often, that I can go back into Safari and my tabs are still there. That would never happen on the regular Plus. The multitasking is much smoother and much faster. Just all in all, it feels much more responsive and much more sort of ready to take on what I throw at it. And that alone is worth the upgrade for me, at least.
Every piece of the OS feels faster to me. Like, I mean, and I know this is the RAM and the it's A9, right?
Yep.
Yeah, the A9 chip, working in tandem and making it just an incredibly capable device, which makes me very happy. There are a couple of like parts of the UI that I would see slowdowns in on the 6 Plus, but I'm not seeing anything like that with the 6S Plus. I never get the S in the right place in my mind. I always, like, I'm never sure if it's 6S Plus or 6 Plus S. It just confuses me. So one thing that we didn't mention, actually, but it was in your piece, was, I mean, a dream that you had, Stephen, which was to fix the camera lens issue, like the little bump, but they didn't do that.
Still there.
Yep. I mean, it's not an issue to me.
No, and the new camera is noticeably better. I mean, they bumped the resolution and have done some additional things, and to my eye, at least, it is drastically better. So I, you know, if it was keep the old camera and get rid of the bump, or get a new camera and keep the bump, then I'd prefer a new camera. So I'm happy with that.
So the speakers, I haven't seen any marked improvement on those. Like, I haven't noticed it being any louder of you.
No, if anything, mine seems a touch softer than the old one.
Oh, no!
So maybe next year. At some point, right, they got to do something with the Beat stuff. I mean, I've used Android phones with, you know, it is gimmicky, but they can really get the volume in there. And so I'm hoping that the 7 will have something. I mean, they're doing that on the iPad Pro, right?
Yeah.
They made a big deal of the speakers, and hopefully that happens with the other devices, too.
The iPad Pro thing, like, it just makes everything else seem so crazy. Like, there's 4 speakers on it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah.
We get one quiet speaker, not quiet, but like one good, decent speaker on everything else, but that one gets 4 of them. Is it like they had a speaker shortage in Cupertino because they put them all on the iPad Pro? Like, there's no more speakers to go around because it's 4?
And it's not just 4 speakers, but when you rotate the device, the audio, like, reflows correctly depending on the device's orientation. That's crazy. And according to people who tried it, it really does work like they say so. So, you know, I'm excited about the speaker part of the iPad Pro, honestly.
I bet that thing gets super loud. Like, I bet you can crank that thing up.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I want to do, you know, crank
especially
it all
with a larger screen. Imagine how big the little speaker UI could be. It could be like, you know, 20 little pips there or something.
Yeah, I want my neighbors to complain because of my iPad Pro. That's my goal. It's going to be in my review.
All right, Touch ID. It's kind of fast to a fault, right? Like, it's just, it's like mental.
I agree. I'm sure like everyone else had the habit of sort of bumping my home button to look at the lock screen to see my notifications. And when you, I mean, you just have to graze the thing now and it unlocks. It is really, really fast. And that's nice. You know, you don't, it used to be like, you know, I pick up my phone and I've got to rest my thumb there for a second. And now that seems so archaic, but I need to relearn the how do I wake up my phone to look at the screen workflow, because bumping the home button unlocks the phone. And so I've tried to get used to hitting the power button. So my Touch ID I have set up with both thumbs and both index fingers. So mm-hmm. if my hands are full or the phone's sitting down, I can unlock it anywhere. And I've taken my index fingers off Touch ID now. I just have my thumbs. And so if someone removes my thumbs, I can't get in my phone anymore. But that has helped too a little bit. I just know to use my index finger if I just want to look at the screen. But then you have to remember that too. It's nice, but the trade-off is a little weird.
Yeah. It's great that it is fast, but like I think when I mentioned how much I wanted it to be instant, which it basically is now, I didn't think about the idea that like now I would never see the home screen again. Because, I mean, and I know, you know, you can unlock it with the side button, but that's just not, you know, that's like 7 years, seven, eight, however many years it's been of brain training that would have to go away. You know?
Yep. Totally agree.
Federico.
Yes.
When can you get one?
That's, I don't know what's the proper answer to that. When it launches in Italy, that's what I'm going to say. On October 9, my girlfriend and I are going to buy an iPhone 6S for her and a 6S Plus for me. We're both going to go the 64 gigs mm-hmm. model, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get the top of the line model because I don't really need all the storage.
Yeah,
so it's less than 2 weeks at this point. And if everything goes correctly and they follow the same pattern as last year, they're going to have... So the iPhone launches on Friday. And in theory, on Wednesday, they should put up the reservation page online. So I should be able to reserve my iPhone, go to the mall, which is 5 minutes away from me, and they're going to have a separate line for people who reserve the iPhone online. And last year, it took me about an hour I was like in and out, and they have a separate line. It was really fast. You go in, you show your ID, you pay for the phone, and you go away, basically. Mm-hmm. That's my plan. A good old-fashioned customer going to the Apple Store to buy an iPhone.
Yeah, that's what I did this time, and it was a good experience. The reservation in store was good, and I was kind of in and out in 15 minutes. Like, yeah. I was really happy with that.
Yeah, it takes a while in Italy because people always argue in line, you know?
Hey, what are they arguing about?
That's the perfect Italian stereotype of people trying to catch you in line, people like arguing. I remember last year there was a separate line. So I went in at like 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And there were still people there from the morning in the separate line. Sure. And there was some person having a nervous breakdown because they were waiting too much. And they didn't understand the concept of you came here this morning without a reservation. These other people made a reservation online. This man didn't quite understand that this type of organization. He was just freaking out, and they had to call security on this guy. You know, Italians, that's what they do. They yell and they are agitated and they make people waste time. Yeah. So
don't get in a fight at the Apple Store. Be careful.
No. I'm a chill, you know, type of person.
Yeah. Yeah. iPhones and chill. I have to say that my favorite thing so far about the iPhone is not the iPhone itself, I think, but the hashtag Mike was right has been on fire the past few days. It has been a lot of fun to see people tweeting their six pluses with the hashtag, mm-hmm. their new purchases. What's been even greater is we did t-shirts for Cortex, and for a lot of people, they arrived on the same day that their iPhones did. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's all mic all the time in some people's post boxes at the moment. So that's been a lot of fun for me.
I mean, it's been quite a year in the land of mic.
You know what it has? The year of mic has provided many fruits.
Much better than the year of Luigi.
Yeah, we've got like another 6 months on Mike was right now, right? Because it's the 18-month rule by the year of Luigi. Obviously, we were about a year. I mean, I think it's a little bit longer, right? Because I bought mine, said how great it was, and then a couple of months later, you guys both agreed with me. And that was when the hashtag began.
So. You got to come up with more opinionated thoughts that people are going to argue against initially, but eventually they're going to agree with you. So you have 6 months to continue using this hashtag before we seed the righteous, you know, part to someone else on the relay team.
Okay. So by the end of this episode, I will have tried to come up with something.
Okay. Try to be opinionated, Mike. That's what you got to do as a pundit on the internet.
I have a very strong opinion right now.
About what?
About Hover.
Okay.
Because they are the best way to buy and manage domain names. Hover has been my place of choice for many years. And as you know, right now, I am very opinionated, right? And my opinion counts. And my opinion is you should be going to Hover to buy your domains. Because when you have an idea for a project, giving it a name can be really difficult. You can kind of sit and brainstorm for days and days and days about the new name that you want to give to your website, your project, your podcast, whatever it may be. And one of the steps that you have to take is to get the domain name. And one of the steps is it available? Because if it's available, great. If it's not, you may have to go back to the drawing board. Hover provides simple, fast, and hassle-free tools to allow you to search for and buy the domain names. You're not faced with thousands of screens. You don't see tons of add-ons with increasingly high prices. They let you get in, select what you need, buy it, and get out. And they also have great tools to allow you to manage that domain afterwards as well. They have all of the TODs that you'd want, expect, and need, like .com, .co, .me, .net, .co.uk. And they also have ones that you maybe wouldn't need so much, but you can get them if you want them, like .plumbing, .fish, .academy, .limo, .diamond, etc., etc. They also have great prices on them as well. For example, their .com domains start at just $12.99, and where available, every single domain that Hover sells will come with Whois Privacy for free. So if the TOD supports Whois Privacy, Hover will just give it to you, and they enable it, right? And you have to go in and say, I don't want it, which is, I think, is definitely the right way to go with privacy stuff like this. This basically means that people can't search your information and find out stuff about you, like your home address, because you can do that with Whois, and a lot of other domain registrars will make you pay for that privilege, which doesn't make any sense to me. I want to mention Hover Connect, which is a new feature that Hover have. So once you've bought your domain and you want to enable it with the website or the service that you want to connect it to, like, say, for example, something like Squarespace or Tumblr or Shopify, usually you have to go in and copy and paste a bunch of numbers, confusing numbers, into different fields. Well, Hover Connect is this new feature where you just go into your domain admin panel, you say which service you want to connect it to, and Hover will automatically amend all of the DNS records for you. Like, they just take care of it. It's just fantastic. And this is on top of Hover's great other stuff that they have. Their customer support is next to none. They have no hold, no wait, no transfer telephone support. They have great email support. They have their valet service where they'll transfer domains for you. They have great guides and information on their website and just so much more. So go to hover.com right now to try them out and use the code SHOWNOTES at checkout, and you will get 10% off your first purchase at hover.com and show your support for this show and all of Relay FM. That is SHOWNOTES, all one word, and of course that code will also be in the show notes. Thank you so much to Hover for sponsoring this week's episode. Let's talk a little bit more about 3D Touch.
Okay.
So, Stephen, how do you feel about it? Like, what do you think about it?
So far, I really like it. I mean, I think there's kind of three things that 3D Touch actually is. There's the actual, I'm pressing down and the phone, you know, provides haptic feedback. There's the home screen shortcut deal where I can 3D Touch on a icon and get quick actions. So, for instance, the camera, Apple's built-in camera has, like, take selfie, take video, I think there's a couple others. And then there's Peek and Pop with an app, so I can be looking at a grid of images in Instagram, for instance, and 3D touch a thumbnail, and it sort of pop up, you know, bigger. So if I'm going through someone's profile, I want to look at a picture, I can do that really easily without having to change screens. I think all three of them together really make a nice cohesive thing. I mean, yes, it's early days, so a lot of apps that I use don't have it yet. Although I will say the home screen shortcuts seem to be coming out pretty rapidly. I think that's relatively easy to implement. But it's nice. It does make, you know, it sort of adds this layer to the iPhone that makes it faster to get around. And like the go back button that appears, you don't have to use it. And if you never notice it's there, if you turn it off, the iPhone still works the way the iPhone always has. But it's sort of this like higher plane of use that does make it faster. And I've already come to, I find myself doing it without thinking about it, even just after, you know, a couple of days. And I do like that it does, you know, speed things up in areas. There's less tapping and waiting for screens and, you know, to slide in and out and all that junk, where you can just quickly look at it and then deal with it if you want to, or come back to it later. I like the cohesiveness that it provides the OS. It feels less like a series of siloed apps, but sort of like, hey, I'm in Messages. I can just like pop into Safari for a second and then pop out of it. I like that sort of breaking down of those walls.
What apps are you using that you like the implementation in?
Well, I use a lot of the built-in apps. I use the built-in mail client, for instance, and I really like it there. I like it a lot in Messages. If someone sends me a link, I can just kind of preview the link and then decide if it's something that I need to deal with, or just, I send you this funny GIF, you know, I can just view it and then come out of it. I do like it in things on the home screen and third-party apps. Like Evernote has one that create a new note, which I've used a couple of times already. And, you know, I think that's really where my usage will grow as more developers use it. But in the built-in stuff right now, it's really quite nice.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more interested to see how developers take this new interaction method and create different things. Like, peek and pop is fine, but it's extremely limited, right? It's just previews. And Dropbox have a really great implementation of it, right? As you would hope that they would, right? It makes perfect sense. I like workflow. So, like, inside the workflow app, you can easily, like, preview the workflow inside of it. Like, so you can kind of see what the steps are before you produce it, which I quite like. But I'm interested to see, like, what are the things that people come up with? Like, what happens there? That's what I'm interested in seeing. Like, you know, not peek and pop, but stuff using 3D touch that developers can take advantage of. And I'm not really, I mean, me and Federico have spoken about this. Like, I'm not really interested in games that have it, because it's fine, but I don't really know. A lot of game makers especially are not really going to be able to do a lot of interesting stuff with it for a long time, because it will make games too difficult to work, right? If you're putting in 3D touch and then some devices can't use it. But I feel like app developers, like for productivity apps and stuff like that, would be able to take more advantage of it, as they may have a wider usage base on the new devices. So I'm interested to see, like, what can OmniFocus do with it that's interesting? What can, like, TapBots do with it and TweetBot that's interesting? That kind of stuff. That's what I'm more excited about. But I do, the more time I've had to think about 3D touch, having used it a little bit, I really am bought into the hype that this is a big, big step forward for iOS, because it is something that didn't exist before, which can provide a new interaction method. And that hasn't come around in any meaningful way in quite some time.
Yeah, I feel like right now most developers are just trying to support all these shortcuts on home screen and peek and pop in their apps. And that's like the same way they added support for widgets or a watch app when they launched.
Or iOS 7 design, right? Like, you just do it as Apple's said to do it, and then think about it again later.
And instead, I'm thinking, if this is really like the new touch, we're gonna see like different input mechanisms in apps, like entirely different interactions. The problem with that is that it's gonna take a few years, because it's only exclusive to the 6S. So right now it makes sense for developers to only support like the basic system stuff. But maybe 2 to 3 years from now, when a developer can come up with an app that's entirely based on 3D touch that wouldn't exist otherwise. Imagine the first iPhone apps or the first iPad apps that were mostly adaptations of what came before. And then they started to kind of leverage the exclusive features of the iPhone, like the gyroscope or, you know, the multi-touch gestures on the iPad. And with 3D Touch, it has the potential to have the same effect on apps. Right now, it's the basic stuff. It's the shortcuts and the pick and pop. But in a few years, you know, down the road, it can be there can be apps and games that only make sense as 3D touch software. And that's exciting, I think. And I'm also considering, like, when Siri first launched, we said, oh, this is going to be the fourth interface of iOS. This is going to be the, you know, the new layer of interaction between users and apps. And that's, you know, that hasn't quite been the case yet, mostly because developers don't have access to Siri. With 3D Touch, we're saying the same thing all over again. It's the new input layer, it's the new interface, but this time Apple is giving developers the tools right away. And that's why I'm more excited about 3D Touch than I was about Siri when it came out. There are two different things, but when it comes to developer support, this is different, you know? And I want to see, like, maybe with the iPhone 7S or the iPhone 8, we're going to have apps that are exclusive to 3D Touch. That's going to be interesting, I think.
Exclusive in what way?
Like, they can only be used on a 3D Touch display.
I mean, how will they, can developers do that?
Yeah, I mean, in the future when, you know, maybe they can make an app that only runs on the iPhone 6S and above, they can create apps and games that, you know, sure, they only make sense as 3D Touch software. That's what I'm imagining.
So there's something that I've been thinking about 3D Touch, which is the home screen interactions, right? So the shortcuts, which, I mean, I think, again, will be more useful over time. I think a lot of the apps that I currently am using them with, it's like, this is useful, but I don't know if I need this, right? Like, I don't know if this is something that I really, really need. But, like, for example, it's really useful in messages because I don't really know how Apple is picking what three people show up in messages. It doesn't really seem to be by any metric that makes sense, but more often than not, it tends to be the person that I want is in there. And then you've got stuff like, you know, Launch Center Pro has some actions, but I like their notification widget more. But, you know, there could be some really good stuff come here in the future, right? The camera stuff is really good, for example. But, you know, not all of my apps on my home screen support this right now. Maybe not all of them should, but we'll see. But this idea of an addition to the home screen that wasn't there before, it signals to me anyway that I believe that 3D Touch is a sign that Apple have no intention of redesigning the home screen for a while. Because they're enhancing the home screen in a new way that hasn't been done before. Which means, personally, I don't expect that iOS 10 will have any meaningful redesign to the way the home screen works. There's your opinion, Federico.
No, I agree with you, Mike. And because in a way, I mean, if it's still early days, but, you know, people who look at the iOS home screen and are unhappy with it, you know, one of the first complaints that comes is widgets, which I don't disagree with. But really, you could create, I mean, theoretically, widget-like functionality behind 3D Touch. You know, definitely. You already have apps that show a badge for the temperature or for the date. And that's, there's already workarounds. And I just wonder if 3D Touch on the home screen is flexible enough for that sort of information to kind of be quickly hidden away. I mean, there's other problems with Spring Board we could get into. But I think that if the idea is I want more information, then if you can display that behind a 3D Touch menu, that doesn't solve the problem perfectly, but it gets us further down the road than where we are today.
Yeah, like I can imagine something UI-wise that is reminiscent of a watch app or an extension that could appear, or even a widget that could appear when you 3D Touch, right? I could imagine something like that, but I can't imagine, you know, widgets on the home screen or whatever.
Yeah.
Because of this. What do you think, Federico?
I saw a teaser of CopyFeed. It's a clipboard manager for the iPhone and iPad, and they showed a 3D Touch shortcut on the home screen. And the first option was a way to quickly recopy the last item from the app, and it showed a preview of the text. So I guess it's possible for developers to kind of hack around the 3D Touch shortcut menu to show data instead of just jumping points. And that's exciting because it kind of opens up a whole layer of, instead of like looking at a widget or opening an app, even if it's faster, I can just peek at the contents from the home screen. It's kind of like Android in this sense, only that you get a tap and, you know, press on an icon to view that kind of information. And I'm curious whether, you know, this is an accepted policy, you know, within Apple, if they're allowed to do that. But I definitely saw a screenshot of a working implementation. And that's, you know, that's the type of stuff I don't have to go to the notification center anymore. I can just press, view the last item that I copied, and recopy it again. And I never have to touch, I never have to open the app. I never have to open the widget or do any kind of navigation. I can just peek and take action instead of, you know, just, you know, jumping around. Even if it's a faster process, I can just remain on the home screen. And that's exciting, I think.
Yeah, I would like that. I mean, it makes sense because it seems like, I mean, again, someone can correct us on this later, but it feels like that there is an element of the apps being able to display something that's dynamic because, you know, like workflow and stuff like that, right? It's pulling in data from inside the app and showing it to you. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, you think it would, you know, it would maybe make sense. I don't know. Like, you know, they're showing stuff from inside the app, so maybe in theory that could be a little bit more fluid of what can be in there. I've seen the image, the tweet that you were talking about, Federico, and I'll put it in the show notes. But it says like recopied last item and shows a preview. Right, that's really cool. That is really really cool. I hope that comes through because again, there you go. This is exactly the type of stuff that we were just talking about, right? Like developers using this technology to create interesting things. Like we always say this, right? And it's becoming a bit of a meme, I think, but people mean it seriously. But it's being used in that way where, like, you know, Apple creates something and we all go, there are going to be apps that are going to be made from this that we never even knew were possible or were never possible before. Like, that is a thing that is said a lot, far too often, I think, these days. But hey, that could be the case here as well. There was something I forgot to mention about the 6 Plus S Plus that I didn't mention before, but I will now because I just got a phone call, is how quiet the Vibrant Motor is, the Taptic engine. Like, if I would have gotten that phone call before, literally everybody would have known about it. But the Taptic motor is very, very quiet. So much so that I am now very happy that I don't have to keep my phone on Do Not Disturb anymore when it's unlocked. Because I was even doing that because I would be getting messages when I'm using my phone and it was so loud that it would disturb people. But now I don't need to do that anymore. So the Taptic engine was much needed in the 6S Plus, and I'm really, really happy that they implemented it.
Yeah, it feels much more refined than the old motor, and they brought it down. So if you pull the screen off the phone, the Taptic engine is towards the bottom of the device now, and that does a couple of things. It makes the 3D Touch feel a little more connected to the screen, I think, and it helps with that balance of the thing vibrating. When it vibrate, you could really tell it was rocking on the camera lens. I think that's one reason it was so loud, especially on a desk. And this thing just seems so much more precise and just refined again. That's a nice improvement. And it's one of those things that, like, I don't know how many people would actually ever notice that, but for those who do, it's a detail worth appreciating.
I think it also makes sense to bring it lower down the device because that's where your hand goes. So if they're going to be using the Taptic engine to provide feedback, like for 3D touch, it makes sense to put it where your hand is most likely to be gripped.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right? I think that's very smart. Very smart. All right. We didn't actually talk about watchOS 2 last week.
Nope.
And I think we all want to. So why don't we do that just after we thank Squarespace? Sound good?
Yeah.
Squarespace, you can start building your own website today at squarespace.com. You want to use the offer code WORLD at checkout. That's going to get you 10% off. And Squarespace, build it beautiful. When it comes to giving yourself a place online, Squarespace should be the place that you check out because they give you all of the tools that you need to build a site that looks professionally designed, regardless of your skill level, with no coding experience required. All of their tools are really intuitive and easy to use, and you can use them to make your website look and feel exactly the way that you want. Squarespace has stunning templates that are really great to look at. They feature responsive web design right out of the box. They look great on all sizes of device. They have, you can really get in and tinker with them as well if you want to, like using the WYSIWYG engine. You can say, like, I want this font and this color and this spacing and all that stuff. And you can also, using their dev platform, kind of get in under the hood and make some more changes to the code if you want to, but you definitely don't need to do that to get your Squarespace site looking the way that you want it to. Squarespace, they power all of their sites with state-of-the-art technology. They ensure security and stability, and they are trusted by millions of people around the world because of this. And they have tons of other great features, like their rock-solid fast hosting, their 24/7 support with live chat and email. They have their commerce platform, which allows anybody to add a store to their Squarespace site. We use that at RelayFM to sell t-shirts and stickers as well, so we do that, and we have our Squarespace commerce site set up so we can do that. The same with our blog at RelayFM as well, because they're going to do this better than we ever could. So why would we spend the time trying to build something like that when we can use Squarespace for it instead? If you sign up for a year, you'll also get yourself a free domain name, allowing you to choose exactly what you want your site to be called. Squarespace plans start at just $8 a month, and you can sign up for a free trial today with no credit card required and start building your own website by going to squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up, make sure that you use the offer code WORLD at checkout. You'll get yourself 10% off your first purchase and show your support for this show. Thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting us today. Squarespace, build it beautiful. So, watchOS 2, I mean, you know, we probably don't need to go through stuff like how the update process was. It was really slow. The fact that I had to delete everything from my watch a couple of days ago to set up with my new phone is ridiculous. But let's talk about the watchOS 2 itself. And so, Stephen, what things in OS 2 are you actually excited about? What are you enjoying?
It's one of those things kind of like 3D Touch. I think that the possibilities are not here quite today. I mean, I've tried a couple of third-party complications. I haven't really been super impressed with any of them. I've tried a couple apps that have been updated, like the OmniFocus app. I mean, they are faster. They still, though, if they rely on a phone for syncing or something, that is still slow. And so the apps themselves are faster, but sometimes the data lag is still there. It's not, I don't think watchOS 2 is like the magic bullet I was hoping for the iPhone. In some ways, I think it's a regression, but I don't know. It just hasn't made a huge impact day to day for me yet.
It's been nicer for me. Apps are faster. They're still not as, you know, as quick as the iPhone. They're still talking to the iPhone in a lot of ways. And there's an improved connectivity framework between watchOS apps, the WatchKit extension, and the iOS app on the phone. But they're faster for me. And I'm looking at examples like pCalc, which has a native watchOS 2 app now. I was able to finally use pCalc as a risk calculator when we go grocery shopping. Me and my girlfriend, we like to keep a total, a tab of the total that we're going to spend. Because of the points that we can accumulate with our card at the supermarket where we go to, and using pCalc while shopping, it's been great with watchOS 2 because the app is faster.
Yep.
It gives me haptic feedback whenever I tap buttons, so I know that I'm doing, you know, stuff correctly on the screen, and I don't have to walk around the supermarket with a phone in my hand anymore, which gives me the freedom to, you know, grab stuff from the shelf, and you know, because the app it's on my watch. And also Water Reminder, it's a native watchOS 2 app that reminds me to drink more water during the day. It's also faster, and I can launch it from a complication on the watch face. It's apps in general, they're faster for me. And David Smith's excellent Sleep Plus, it's the faster app that I have on my watch. I've been using this new app whenever I go to sleep each night. I follow David's instructions to set it up with airplane mode, so I can keep my watch when I sleep. And in general, I feel like they're not, the watchOS 2 is not the real native OS that we're kind of looking forward to, but that's obviously coming down the road in the future of the watch. And I'm spending too much time, that's a good problem to have, I guess. I'm spending too much time customizing my watch face and my complications. And I feel like the early days of getting a new iPhone where I'm moving icons around, I still don't know what I really need. I'm playing around with a lot of apps. And it's fun, you know, if you like to spend time setting up your gadgets the way that you like them to. It's been a fun process for me. I still feel like the watch can be too complex in a lot of ways. And I feel like the fact that a lot of Apple apps don't have a watch version yet is completely absurd. My girlfriend, she's a normal human being, you know, she's not a tech person. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way. In fact, she's the normal one and I'm the obsessed one. But she complains all the time that there's no native reminders app on the watch. And she's right. It doesn't make any sense that you can't, you know, have a list on the iPhone and have the same list on the watch as well, because that would be super convenient. When
other apps are doing it.
Other apps are doing it. Exactly. Other apps. There's, you know, there's going to be reminders clients. But still, she has a point. There should be a native, you know, reminders app on the watch. And maybe,
but that's what I mean. Like, if other people can do it, Apple should be doing it.
And I don't understand why they went to, you know, they made other apps that I could argue are not as useful as maybe reminders could be. So it's kind of weird to, you know, kind of weird mix of Apple apps on the watch. So WatchOS 2, my opinion is it's a nice step forward, but I'm waiting for WatchOS 3. You know, it still feels limited in a lot of ways. It's better, kind of halfway there, maybe.
Yeah, I like some of that stuff too. Like I'm not actually using a ton of apps on my watch anyway, and I'm using even less that are WatchOS 2 enabled. But pCalc is one of them. The OmniFocus one is way better as well. And it's nice to be able to go through the OmniFocus watch app if I need to, and everything loads quickly. So that's really great. So, I mean, I'm enjoying that. But for me, some of the stuff that I like that there are more color options for customizing the watch faces. They have some that match the new bands, and they also have new names attached to them now too, which is really good. Because when I have six Apple Watch sport bands at the moment, and I like to change the colors to match the sport band. I'm happy that one click on the crown, if you're not zoomed out, that is, takes you back to the watch face. You don't need to click twice now on the crown. And also the Wi-Fi mode. I don't know if you guys have had any experience using this yet.
No, not really.
So do you know what this does? Because I'd forgotten about it.
We talked about it on virtual, I think, Mike. Yeah.
So this is the idea that if your phone isn't near you or your phone isn't connected to something, your watch can connect to any Wi-Fi network that your phone knows. So I've tested it out and it's useful. And this was something that Adina was really interested in. And she sent me a text message today from her watch while she was in the cafeteria, which is on the opposite side of the street to her building where her phone was charging. And she was very happy about that. She liked that she could use her watch to do things when her phone wasn't around. Like, it's just basic stuff. But she was able to see messages from me. She could send messages to me. We could still exchange digital touch stuff, which we still do. And I like now that you can change the colors of the drawings. So that adds a layer of artistry to my digital touch drawings that I didn't have before. So the Wi-Fi mode is something that I think is really, really cool. So I like that is there, for sure.
I told my girlfriend about the new multicolor option on the watch face. And she really likes it, but she thinks there should be a way to... basically, she want to be able to customize each complication, even like the time and the date, to a different color, because she likes the idea of the multicolor option, but she wants to be able to customize each option individually. And it makes sense, but I told her that's the kind of, you know, deeper customization that Apple doesn't like to do in the first versions of an OS. But that's got to be coming in the future, I think.
Should we talk about colors on the watch faces?
I think we should.
Let me give you my opinion first, because it's really something that has been driving me crazy. What's the problem with having colors on a watch face? It's fun. It's, you know, each color represents a different icon and it gives you like a better legibility. And I don't understand people who are freaking out about colors on their watch faces.
My problem. Okay, so let me tell you why I think it's okay, this is going to sound way too extreme. I think it is fundamentally and philosophically wrong.
Wow. My God, Mike, it's a watch, not the Constitution.
Do you know what it's, you know, it's not a watch though, Federico. It is the most personal device I have ever owned.
Uh-huh. Mhm.
If something is the most personal device that I've ever owned, don't reach in and change it. So I very much liked and was very happy with the utility face. And then I turn it on after the watchOS 2 and my activity rings are colored. And I'm like, okay, I can see the utility in that. I tried it for a couple of days and was like, no, I don't like this. I want to change it back. You can't. But you can change it on some other watch faces, but not the utility one. So it's like, why have you changed something? Like this, I had the watch set up how I wanted to. And now I can't have it like that, so you have changed it. So I now use a different watch face. I now use the simple face, which I don't like as much, because I don't want one of the icons to be colored like that on my... Because all of the other complications I was using didn't have color on them. And it just doesn't make sense to me. Like on modular, you can choose to turn the multicolor option on. But on... what was it? I always forget the name. On utility... You can't. And it, so it doesn't make sense to me why you would make that option and also why you would change it and then make it the default. Like, that's what I don't like. And that's why I say, like, that I think it is wrong from a fundamental perspective because it goes against Apple's marketing message for the watch.
What's your problem with colors?
It's only because it's mismatched. So the colors are there and I didn't have color in any of my other complications. And I don't want it to be colored like that. I prefer it monochrome when I look at it. I think it looks nicer to have it monochrome because when the colors are there, it draws my attention away, which isn't exactly what I want at all times. I maybe want to look at a specific part of the watch. So I just don't want it that way. So considering like how customizable this device is, why make a binary change to an option and not allow me to customize it when I can customize it on other watch faces? That is my problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
I know that I'm being a bit crazy about it, but
boring because colors are fun, you know?
They are, but it's not what I want, though. Like, I like the color of the second hand. That is the color that I want because I match that color to the watch band that I have. That's what I like to do with my watch, and I like that to be the only color because I think that that adds the personality that I want.
And to your point, Mike, the fact that you can't change it back. I mean, it's fine to add options, but don't take options away. My problem with it, I mean, is the matching, but also that out of the corner of my eye, it looks, if you're just glancing down, it looks like there's a notification coming in because it's at the top, you know, or at least where I keep mine on the utility faces at the top. And it's a bit of color that I'm not used to. And you know, previously you just had the second hand and then you had the red notification alert little dot guy, and now that is competing with it in a way that is distracting to me, at least. And so I was already back and forth between simple and utility, but I've rooted myself in the simple camp now, really, because I can't keep those activity rings from being colored again. It's fine. I think it looks nice. It's just not for me. And so why change it and take away my ability to have it the way that it used to be?
I agree that it looks nice, but also it's not what I want. So.
There should be more color in your life, guys.
I have 6 watch bands of different colors. That's enough color for me.
There's never enough color for you, Mike.
I want to give you guys a life hack. All right.
Oh, okay.
Are you ready for a life hack? Because I don't want to talk about color on the things anymore. So I'm going to give you a life hack instead. Mm. With time travel. I've set up a modular watch face as a time zone checker thing. What do you call that? A time zone app?
Time shifting app.
Yeah.
I get what you're trying to do, Mike.
So I've set up 3 complications, New York, Memphis, and San Francisco. And so now I can use time travel to check the time in different time zones and compare them to mine. I mean, in theory, you could use like 5 of them on here or something, but I only really need 3. So there you go. That's my life hack for you.
That is genius, Mike. I'm doing this right now.
And you can have your calendar in the middle, right? So then also, not only when you're checking to see about the time, you can also see if you're aware of an appointment at that time when you're trying to book a meeting in.
That's a very nice Mike life hack.
There you go.
One small teachy tip, if you use the workflow complication, time travel lets you switch across multiple workflows. So you spin the digital crown, and with time travel, you cycle through workflows that you have enabled as a complication.
That is a genius piece of software development by them, by the way. Because on the face of it, it seems like this is weird. Like, you're showing me a random one, and then it's like, oh, now I get it. It's very clever.
Yeah. I could make the case for having to, you know, I want to have multiple complications from workflow at the same time. I don't know if it's a limitation from WatchOS 2 or if it's just a decision of the developers, but still, it's a nice workaround right now. You can just spin the digital crown and you move between the different workflows in the same complication. It's nice. It makes for a nice demo.
It does indeed. Yeah, I think it's very, very clever. Very clever. I like the carrot weather complication as well. We're talking about complications. It's the best weather one that I've found, because even on the little small complication, it has the temperature and the like a little icon of the weather, right? So it showed me a little cloud or something. Very cool.
By the way, let me have some quick follow up, because I saw some people on Twitter and the koala kind of poking fun at me because I'm famously against the idea of checking weather apps when you can just look out of the window. First of all, I always try to understand why other people are into something that I don't understand. So that's why I try new stuff all the time, because I try not to be too stuck on my own ideas. I like to experiment. I'm always curious. And the second one is, I need to test WatchOS 2 complications. So, of course, I'm trying out what people believe and what I believe are one of the best complications around yet, which is the Carrot Weather app. I don't need to look at the weather all the time. I'm looking outside of my window right now, and it's quite nice here today, by the way. I just want to try new stuff, because I don't want to be one of those old people saying, yeah, this doesn't work for me, so I'm never gonna check it out. That's not how, you know, how I'm built. I'm built for experimentation, and that's what I like to do.
And that's why we love you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, have you guys used the nightstand mode very much?
No.
Not really, because now that I use David's app, I don't need nightstand mode.
Oh, there you go, smart. I don't use it because I don't have a stand, and I want to wait until the stands that come out that have got like the made for Apple Watch program, whatever, you know, the 9to5 reported on this a while ago that Apple are allowing people to create stands with integrated chargers into them now. So I'm waiting for those, and then I'm going to get a stand, and then maybe we'll use the nightstand mode.
Yeah. I haven't used David's app yet. I need to get around to that. I have been using nightstand mode though. It's nice. The alarm sound is quite nice, and it's nice that the watch's screen will go off until you like bump it, so you can kind of like I can like bump my nightstand and the screen comes on, and it's like a dark green, so it's not real hard on your eyes if you turn over in the middle of the night and want to check the time. It's a nice addition, and I think it's something that I think most people are going to still charge their watches at night, you know, not going to move to the 24/7 thing, but it's a nice little touch that, you know, the thing's already there charging on my nightstand. Why not make it useful when it does that?
I probably should point out that I know you don't need a stand to do this, but my little charging puck is, I stuck it to my desk so it doesn't like flail around all the time. So that's why it's just stuck to my desk, my bedside table. So that's why I can't just lay it on the side, because it won't work. So there you go. But I mean, so WatchOS 2 is a good jump. I think it just signals that there's still more to come, and a lot of the stuff that they've added is fine. So it's great. I mean, you know, what do you guys use your watch for, Federico? What do you actually use your watch for on a daily basis?
That's a great question, Mike. I'm still trying to understand the watch. You know, I would say I love my watch for notifications. Mm-hmm. That sounds so stupid, but just being able to pick out an email and archive it right away, it's a major addition to my daily habits. I love my watch for looking at phone calls and hanging up on people. I'm sorry, but I don't like getting phone calls. And I love the ability to understand quickly who's calling me. I also love my watch for cooking pasta because I need to set a timer. And it's so simple to set up a timer complication. And I liked, you know, Italians, real Italians, don't overcook their pasta. And so whatever's on the box.
Al dente, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And me and my girlfriend, like, actually a minute before al dente, we do usually what's on the...
What do you call that?
Molto al dente, just like al dente very much. me and my girlfriend, we...
I'm going to start cooking my pasta al dente very much. That is my new way of doing it.
Whatever's on the box for cooking time, we said 2 minutes ahead. So with the watch, with the phone, I used to calculate the time in my mind. And on occasion, like, I forgot and it was a mess and we used to fight over pasta. So you don't want to do that. With the watch, I can just set up a timer, look at the time. It's super easy for cooking. And I love it for as a cooking accessory. Fitness stuff. That was one of the features that I was most excited about the watch. But with WatchOS 1, third-party apps, which were what I wanted to use, were basically useless because they didn't have native performance or native access to sensors. Now that there's WatchOS 2, I'm downloading a bunch of apps, and I'm getting into a new exercise routine for the new year. So I'm kind of rethinking the entire fitness part, and that I'm still not sure about. I have big hopes for WatchOS 2 and fitness, but I'm still trying to understand what's the best app for me. Because the Apple Workout app doesn't really work for me because I don't do runs or walks. I do like stretching because of the physical therapy that I have to do for my leg. So I need very specific apps. And I'm still browsing around the App Store. In fact, if you guys have any fitness app for WatchOS 2, any recommendations, please send them to me because I need to be aware of them. It's not easy to browse on the App Store for the Apple Watch. It's not always updated, and it's hard to find app updates, you know? Mm-hmm. So, right now it's notifications, phone calls, hanging up on people, I love that. And cooking pasta, that's what I do.
Perfect.
Oh, also, I should say, controlling music and podcast playback. I love the remote glance. Also, that one.
Yeah, I'm similar in a lot of those ways. The music and podcast playback, notifications is a big thing for me. I like just, you know, the small actions on notifications that you can take, right? Is very, very good, and I like that a lot. There are some apps that is like I always mentioned Dew as just a fantastic WatchOS app. Like, it's just superb. I don't even think that they've had an OS 2 update, and it still feels as responsive as any app that I use on my watch. I don't actually know how they do it, but it's just brilliant. And I mean, you know, some of the activity tracking stuff is good. Like, it's nice that I have it and I think about it and act upon it. And you know, I still like that stuff. I'm maybe one of the only people in the world that likes Digital Clutch, because, you know, me and Adina, we use it in a meaningful way.
Yes, me and Sylvia too.
Okay, good.
Actually, whenever I drive Sylvia to class every day, she says, because of Rome's crazy traffic and there's a dangerous intersection before we get home, she wants to know every time when I get home safely. And we used to send each other a text message when I got home. Now I just tap on the watch. She gets a tap, she responds, and we know that everything's fine, I'm home. So yes, we're also using that in a very practical way. It's also fun, but it's also, you know, practical. And it's faster, because whenever I'm parking, I don't have to reach out to my phone and write a text message, and it's, you know, it's boring. I can just, you know, hold up the watch, tap the side button, then tap on the friend icon to send a bunch of taps, which is nice, also useful. Yeah.
Steven, I assume that was you. Just sent me a little Digital Touch.
I did. Frederick was talking. I was like, I haven't sent one in weeks. I just sent one to Mike.
I don't have that phone number.
Oh, yeah. I'm on a T-Mobile SIM today, which is an interesting...
A story for another time.
My watch usage really aligns closely with you guys. I really like the notifications. I will say, working at home, I'm much more prone to use Siri just throughout the day than when I had an office. And so I will respond to text messages or whatnot just on my, even if I'm sitting at my computer, sometimes just on the watch via dictation. A lot for things like timers and alarms and for the workout stuff too. It has not really made any impact in other types of usage. So I don't like review my OmniFocus list for the day on my watch. I'm going to do it on my computer or my phone. You know, those sort of things, like, I know it can do them, but maybe it was watchOS 1 and I'm just have been turned off for the idea, but it's just going to be slower and more clunky on the watch. And so why do that when I already have a phone or a Mac at hand? So we'll see if that changes over time. But at this point, you know, it's a fitness tracker with notifications, and that's really about it.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I'm okay with that. Like, the Apple Watch is a device that I use very simply, but it has become an important device that I own and that I put on every day, and I like mm-hmm. it. And one of the key things for me is Adina puts hers on every day too. And yeah. and that for me is more of an interesting data point than for me. Like, if we are planning on staying at home, she puts her watch on in the morning, same as I do. And that is, you know, that is for me as key a thing as anything else, because she somebody who doesn't care about this stuff just for the sake of caring about it, continues to use and make use of her watch every single day. Like, one of the other big things, timers for cooking. I use my Apple Watch for that constantly. And that is not constantly, only when I'm cooking, of course. Like, I don't use timers for cooking when I'm not cooking. But it is something that I use and I really like, and I like that it's just simple to set up. And I've even started, I was doing this today, and something I'm going to think about doing is using timers for working. Like saying, all right, I'm going to do this for an hour, and then just sitting down and just powering through it through something for an hour at a time, and having the timer complication on the watch face, which I set today. I might keep that on there and try and use that as a system for myself. I might talk about that later if I do. But I mean, I know people are down on the watch or whatever, I think, in some circles. But for me, it has become an important part of my computing life, I think.
Yeah, I cannot just say the very simple act of wearing the watch, it makes me look cool. It's nice to look at. It's a nice accessory. And I have bought four different bands. I have the Milanese loop, I have the leather loop, I have a black sport band, and I just bought a red sport band. And I think I can change the watch depending on, you know, my outfit, and it's nice. It's a nice thing to wear. That's the basic aspect of wearing a watch for me.
Yeah, I agree. And it's nice and customizable.
Yeah.
Right, I think that about wraps up this week. If you would like to catch our show notes, you can head on over to relay.fm/connected/59. Thanks again to our sponsors this week, the good people over at Squarespace, Hover, and Casper. If you want to find us individually online, you can go to Twitter. Stephen is at ISMH, Federico is at Vitici, V-I-T-I-C-C-I, and I am at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E. Federico also writes over at MacStories.net. Don't forget to sign up for Club Mac Stories. And he's also the host of Virtual on Relay FM with myself, and Stephen writes over at 512pixels.net, and he is also the host of Liftoff on Relay FM with the wonderful Jason Snell. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next time. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Arrivederci.
Adios.